All right, we're beginning here at the beginning of Bava Batra. As always, we'll give a slight introduction to the Masechta, and then after that to the Perek. In terms of the introduction to the Masechta, it's much shorter or smaller than the other Masechta in terms of introduction, because it doesn't really rely on that which is found in Torah Shebichtav. This is the one Masechta, as opposed to Bava Kamo and Bava Metzia, which are very tort law that is based on that which is written in the Torah. And then it expands from that which is written in the Torah. In Bava Metzia, we saw that with regards to the Issurei HaTorah, whether it's Lo Talin Pulat Sachir, whether it's charging rebate, whether it's the Shomrim. These are all Parshiot HaTorah that the Gemara is darshaning, and then explicating on those Parshiot HaTorah. In Bava Kama, we dealt with the areas of Nezek, the areas of penalties for Nezek. And again, areas of the Torah addresses that people have to make restitution, people have to make whole when they do damages. So again, they're based on Dinim Deoraita that are then explicated on. In Bava Batra, we don't really have that phenomenon. The majority of the Masechta is not based on issues that are issues Deoraita, with the exception of what I would call overarching themes. The one that I always mention, that is the Ramban's Ala Torah, his interpretation of the Pasuk V'asita Yashar V'atov. And in explaining the Pasuk V'asita Yashar V'atov, he explains it very similarly to the Pasuk Kedoshim Tiyu. Kedoshim Tiyu, according to the Ramban, is an overarching theme that should govern the conduct of an individual when it comes to any of the laws of the Torah. That a person should not be a Naval B'shut Torah, but rather be Kadosh. So it governs all your activity. The same thing is true V'asita V'yashar V'atov B'enei Hashem. The Ramban says about that, Al Derech HaPshat, Yomar Tishmeru Mitzmot Hashem V'edotav V'chukotav V'tekavein B'asiyatam L'sota Tov V'yashar B'enav Bilvad. Always try to do what's right in the eyes of God. U'leman Yitav Lach. And then He will do good to you. Havtecha. Yomar, ki b'asotcha tov be'enav, if you do what's good in Hashem's eyes, then Hashem will also do good to you, to those that are yisharim in their lave. But he says, u'l'raboteinu b'ze midrash yafeh. The raboteinu, our rabbis have a great midrash on this pasuk. Amro zup shara v'lifnim mishur tadin. This references to compromise and doing things that are not at the letter of the law, but rather the spirit of the law. V'hakavana b'ze. And what does that mean? It says, you should keep all the precepts that I have commanded you. What about the things that I didn't command you? Then I'll tell you how you should conduct yourself. You should conduct yourself in a way or a manner that is yashar v'tov. God loves things that are tov, that are good, and yashar, that are straight and just. Inyan gadol. He says this is a really big deal. The Torah cannot explicitly mention everything or interactions between people and their neighbors. And all of his transactions. And all civil laws and social contracts. After Hashem already gave you a large number of them, including lo teilech rachil, lo tikom, lo titor, lo tamod al dam reyacha, lo tekalel cheresh, mipnei seva takum kiyotze bo, gives you a list of levim, chazar v'amar b'derech chlal, gives you a general principle, which is, she'aseh atov yashar b'chol davar, you should do that which is right and just in everything, ad shikanes b'zeh pshara, lifnim yishur tadin, and all of the dinim, like, dined bar metzra, things that, how do you deal with your neighbor, a person who owns adjacent properties to you when you're selling them, and so on and so forth. That's how the Ramban interprets the Pasuk. And obviously that has great ramifications in terms of the Ramban's view of basically what he calls Dat Torah. This is the real Dat Torah, which is that the Torah gives us Lavim, gives us instructions in general how to deal with our neighbors, and he listed out numerous items. And he says, if you take those all together, then you'll have a sense of what God expects from you and how to act with your neighbors. If you use that and extrapolate from that, that Torah, then you will come up with the principles that should govern how we interact with our neighbors. And that's what Bava Batra is about. Bava Batra is very much about the issues and items of how people interact and what are the expectations in those situations, as well as the governance in those situations when it comes to those civil laws that deal with our neighbors. So when it comes to Bava Batra, there are certain items that are deoraita. For instance, the first parak, part of it might be issues that arise that are issues mina Torah, that are either subsumed under Vasita Yashar Vatov, which for the Ramban has expansive coverage, and therefore he could have more things that are deoraita. But we'll have a lot of items that really social contracts between parties, where the Torah Shebe'al Peh is codifying the social contracts or the agreements between parties and how they conduct themselves towards each other. And therefore, you will see the refrain, including in this first Mishnah, Hakol Kaminag HaMedina, that this is something that is governed by the practices in that locale or the way that people conduct themselves towards each other. So that's one area. You have issues that are Dirabanan, where the Rabbanan set up structures or guided posts in order to help people deal with these interactions. So that means preventative measures as well as active measures to instruct us of how to act or how to interact with our neighbors. That's manifest in the earlier prakim here with the shutafim, dealing with partners, dealing with people that are neighbors. Later on in the Masechta deals with transactions, dealing with chazakot and the ideas of what is included in a transaction. Whenever there's a lack of clarity in what happened in the transaction, how do we govern the transaction? So that we'll have later on the Masechta. We'll have that with Karka, with Sadeh, Metaltalim. All these different items. How does the transaction look? How should it look? And what's the proper governance for those transactions, including Kinyanim? And what establishes your rights to certain items? What makes it yours, even if you don't have a contract? All of these items are going to be covered by the Masechta. Later on in the Masechta, we will re-enter the world of Doraita, which is the areas of Yerusha, which is that there is a Torah prescription, there is a parshiyah in the Torah, and that governs overall the areas of inheritance. Although much of the prakim, the end of the Masechta, are about, in a sense, avoidance of the Yerusha in the Torah, or how to gift these items to children without having it go through the process of Yerusha. They do darshan what the Torah prescription is, and how it works by the Torah prescription, but also the mechanisms like Matanat Chaim, Matanat Shchiv Meira, Tuba, how do they impact on what is the Doraita level inheritance, because these are rabbinic institutions that are somehow overriding that which is Doraita. So there again, in the end of the Masechta, we'll come back to those issues. So because of that, the Masechta has a lot of items that are Dirabanan, a lot of items which are social contracts, some items that are Doraita, but also you'll find in this Masechta more than any other Masechta case law. You'll find a tremendous amount of case law because, again, when you're not dealing with an overarching Parshiyah Min HaTorah, which gives you certain dinim that you're trying to darshan, then case law or common law becomes the basis for a lot of what the Gemara is going to establish and show the proper way to behave is. So that framework is something that is given a lot more consideration in this Masechta because so much of it is about adjudication between parties, between partners, between neighbors. All of that is governed by this Masechta, and therefore case law will play a very important role in the Masechta. All right, that's a short introduction to the Masechta, again, because there's nothing that we can just pinpoint and say, oh, this is going to be the themes that we're going to see, but it's a more of an overarching idea of a Yasita Yashar V'atov. In terms of the introduction to our Perek, the Balei Tosafot off the bat say that Seder Nezikin, Chad Masechta Hi. Seder Nezikin is all one Bag Masechta. That means Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, and Baba Batra are just really sub-chapters in the larger Masechta of Seder Nezikin. But he says, even according to the one who says that it's not one big Masechta, you still have to explain what is the connection between the previous Masechta and the following Masechta. And he goes on to show that even though we say that in general between Masechtot there's no such thing as order, but once it was codified and placed in this order, you have to explain what is the order, why does one Masechta follow the other Masechta? That already we dealt with a little bit in the last perek of Baba Metzia, but the last perek of Baba Metzia dealt with either partners, achim, that split a certain property or area, or you have a socher maskir, the relationship between them and the obligations on the different parties. And that's what leads us into here, which is from Abayit Valiyat, the last parak in Baba Metzia, we lead into Ashutafim. Shutafim, which is partners and dealing with the obligations that partners have towards each other. The overarching motif of the perek relies on this amorphous idea called hezek ri'iyah. Hezek ri'iyah is damage done through seeing. And so you'll see it pop up here and there through the perek, but it's clearly a motif that is driving a lot of what's going on in the perek. And that is the recognition or lack of recognition of to whether there is hezek ri'iyah. Is there this idea that you can cause damage by simply looking? Over here you have different approaches as to what exactly the problem is or the isur of hezek ri'iyah is. Many point later on the Masechta to the pasuk that is found in the klalot, the brachot of Bil'am, of Matov Olecha Yaakov, where Chazal darshan from that, what did he see? He saw that they didn't open their tents facing each other, that there was privacy given to individuals, and many see that as being the d'oraita impetus for this idea of hezek ri'iyah. Others see the basis for that, and we'll see a little bit of that today, as being ayin hara, the prevention or the problem of ayin hara. Others see it as being a problem of lashon hara, like the Ramban said over here, lo techa leich rachil be'amecha, that finding out and gossiping about other people is only enhanced by your ability to see what they're doing and to have vision into what they are doing. The more rationalist approach of people like the Rambam and others who, for ayin hara, is not easy for them to explain, they look at ayin hara being a problem not in what damage you can cause, but the damage to the individual who, in ayin hara, is someone who is miserly, someone who is having bad midot because of what they are doing or because of their gazing into their neighbor's yards, whether it comes from jealousy, whether it comes from other bad midot that will develop. Now, because of that, this hezek ri'iyah drives the necessity to do something about hezek ri'iyah. We're going to see again in today's daf that there are different locations. And in different locations, there may be a higher standard or lower standard of hezek ri'iyah. We can give extremes. In the public domain, hezek ri'iyah is not really an issue because everybody has a right to be there. And you have to expect that in the public domain that people are going to be looking and seeing what you're doing. And that's a part and parcel of being in the public domain. On the other side, the other extreme is inside your house. Almost everybody agrees that once you're inside your house, hezek ri'iyah is certainly a problem. That someone being able to gaze into your house is a serious issue because one expects within the confines of their house to have privacy and to be able to do things that are tsanua, especially in their day where their houses were very small, only involved one or two rooms maybe, and the need for privacy was extreme in those areas because so much of your life was exposed. Then the house is a center of privacy, and then over there everybody agrees, even just for the matters of tzniut, that you should have the ability to have privacy there, and hezek ri'iyah exists. Many of the issues revolve around areas that sit in between, which is, for instance, the chatzer. The chatzer is an outdoor area that is shared by a number of houses, but it's an area in their day where much of what went on was done in the chatzer. In the house, you were sleeping, maybe eating, but any of your processing, your cooking, all of that stuff, much of that was done out in the chatzer. So things today that we would consider private, working in your kitchen, were done out in the chatzer, in a public arena where other people had the ability to see. So then, is there hezek ri'iyah or not hezek ri'iyah in those instances? The same is true in your gina, in your garden, and then out in the sadeh, in the bik'ah. So again, you could see there the range moving away from where you need more privacy to less privacy. But those are the areas where this hezek ri'iyah brings up a question. What exactly hezek ri'iyah is also subject to a machloket, and that machloket also leads to what is the rectification of that problem. So many see hezek ri'iyah as actually being nezek, that you are causing. You are causing damage to the other party. That damage might be through ayin hara, something that would be to the detriment of the other party, but you're looking at them will cause there not to be a bracha, or cause there to be something negative associated with it, or that damage, we'll see in a second, I'll give you an alternative to that, might be caused by other matters. Now, again, with the Rambam, who looks at ayin hara a different way, you would have to explain it that it's detrimental to the party who is giving the ayin hara rather than the receiving party or the object of the ayin hara. That's one way to view it, and therefore the demand to put up a separation or a wall or some sort of way to protect against it is under the rubric of preventing nezek. And you have an obligation to prevent nezek. Now that will lead us down later on in the Masechta to a machloket between whether it's ala mazik, the harchikat atzmo, or an nizak, the harchikat atzmo. Is it the mazik's obligation to distance himself, or is it the nizak's obligation to distance himself? Over here, the Balei Tosafot, and we'll see this later in today's daf, argue that in our case, it makes no difference. That over here, everybody agrees that it's the mazik's obligation because of the fact that, and we had this in the end of Bava Metzia, it's gire delay. It's such a direct result of your actions. The problem? So there, even Rabbi Yossi agrees that when it's gire delay, it's your arrows that you are shooting, then it's the mazik's problem, and the mazik's got to distance himself. And therefore, the Balei Tosafot feel that the obligation is on the mazik to stop doing the nezek. And therefore, the obligation lies with the mazik. Over here, we'll see that there's a dual obligation because the hezek is coming from both sides or both parties. On the other hand, you could view the problem here of the nezek, which is the obligation or the co-obligation to pay for whatever it is. So rather than it being harchakach the nezek, which is what the Ramban sees, and that's what the Balei Tosafot see, the Rosh, on the other hand, sees the building of a wall or separation between the parties as simply a monetary obligation that devolves upon the two partners. And so each partner has to contribute to the wall, not because of any nezek issues, not because they're being mazik, but simply because there's an obligation to separate. And that separation is governed by the rules of the area or the locale. And because of that, you have to now contribute each party evenly into this building of the wall or separation between you, because that's what's expected of people in these circumstances, in these situations. So the Rosh sees this as being a monetary obligation of partners, rather than being a prevention of nezek. There is an interesting opinion brought by, I think they have an Ezel, the Achronim discuss this type of idea, which really mixes the two together and says that the necessity for the wall is because you're damaging the other party in his inability to do private matters in his area. That if you can see in there, he can no longer do things that are private because you have ability to see. So the nezek you're causing is not damage in the sense that we speak about damage here. It's the, opportunity lost. It's the loss of privacy that you caused by being able to see there. So now you need to do something about that loss. How do you do that? You separate or put up a wall that prevents your ability to see it. Now you're giving him back his ability to utilize the area for private matters. And so that's how you prevent it. So it's a mix of the two, saying there is nezek, but it's not direct nezek. It's prevention of the lost opportunity, which means that in the end you have to solve a problem to give him that opportunity back. So those are different ways to view this issue of Ezekiah, just a big picture idea. And again, we're going to delve into it right now to discuss exactly what the issues are. Hashutafim shiratzu lasot mechitza. The shutafim that want to make a mechitza, this will be a discussion in the Gemara. Why is it shiratzu that want to do it? That implies that there is some voluntary nature to this, and we have to just understand what the voluntary nature is, because it should be, based on what we said, an obligation rather than voluntary. And the Gemara will give two opinions or two options as to how to make this work within the Mishnah. So I'm going to leave that aside right now. Rashi notes over here that when we talk about chatzerot, when we talk about a chatzer in the Mishnah, a chatzer is a courtyard into which numerous houses open. And that, again, is going to be a recurring refrain in the Gemara coming up in explaining how you divide up the chatzer, how the utility of the chatzer is. It's an area that has a certain amount of public side to it because many people open up into it. But on the other hand, it's still private because it's limited to the number of houses that are open into this courtyard, into this chatzer. So now, bonim et hakotel ba'emtza. You build the wall in the middle. The middle, where the dividing line is between the property. That's how most Rishonim learn it. Bonim be'emtza means that you put it in the middle. Middle can mean literally the middle, the 50% spot, or the middle can be where the dividing line is between the properties. Maybe somebody has more rights in the chatzer or more room in the chatzer, and therefore the dividing line is not exactly 50-50. But their contribution to put up this wall or fence between them is 50-50. We'll see later on what that means, 50-50, because there are two things that you have to contribute. You have to contribute the wall itself, the materials for the wall, as well as the land upon which it sits. So now the 50-50 over here, it's not clear which of those two it's speaking about. In addition, there is an alternate opinion in the Rishonim that want to suggest that the division here, be'emsa, doesn't mean literally 50-50 in terms of like where we put it. Not like what I said before, it's not the location, but rather you always split it once you find the dividing line, but rather that there is also a division. If you own 2/3 of the courtyard and he owns 1/3, then you have to contribute 2/3 of the land for the wall and the other one the 1/3, and the same thing with the materials to put up. So that's one of the Rishonim wants to suggest such a thing. Most Rishonim reject it for the obvious reason was, why should it make a difference? Your larger ownership in the chatzer makes no difference to the wall being there and the need for both parties to have the wall that is there. Makom shenagu livnot gvil, gazit kfisim levinim bonim. All these items will be defined in the Gemara, but it's important that we give slight definitions to them now because the Mishnah is about to explain how much space you need to give for each one of them. So gvil are just large stones, very large quarried stones. Gazit are large quarried stones that have been chiseled to not have sharp edges anymore, to be squared out or shaped in a manner that they sit. So they take up less space. Mark calls it karna de mursha. The points of the stones are not there because you've sliced it down, you've carved it down to a square. So gazit will take up less space than gavil. Kfisim are half of a brick. So we'll see in the Mishnah in a second what that means, but it's a half brick. The next thing is levenim, which are bricks. So you would, a full brick. So you would expect a full brick to be bigger than a small brick. That's not obviously true given what the order of the Mishnah is. The order of the Mishnah is going from the biggest to the smallest. So it gave you gvil in the beginning, which are these hewn stones, but unchiseled. They are irregular sizes. And then you have gazit, which are these shaped and chiseled stones. Then you have these half bricks. So what the Gemara will note is that you put in two half bricks and then put filler between them. So that creates a larger wall, as opposed to levenim, which are just straight up bricks. So it says that what the minhag is, bunim, that's what you build. Hakol kiminhag hamidina. Everything is based on the minhag hamidina. Now, over here, what does that mean, hakol kiminhag hamidina? So how much governance does kol kiminhag hamidina have in this matter? Because the Mishnah is about to give you sizes, and it gave you materials. Once you've done that, what's left to the Minhag HaMedina if it already has governance in the Mishnah? So, okay, so called Minhag HaMedina is what you choose from. But once you choose, are you then governed by the rules of the Mishnah? Or is a called Minhag HaMedina give you more flexibility and the Mishnah is just giving you when there is no Minhag HaMedina, what are the rules? So you can already see that in the Balei HaTosafot, first of all, in explaining Kfisim. The way that we explained it was that they were bricks or half bricks. Tosafot over here is bothered by the Pasuk in Chavakuk, which says that kafis me'etz ya'anena, which is that kafis seems to be from wood and not stone or not made out of bricks. So he says, Omari, the shema yumenichim me'etzim milamalo ulamata. He says maybe they used to fill either with wood or they used to use wood at the bottom and the top to hold them in place. So he tries to figure out how you can make this both wood and stone. Others suggest that kafisim is not defined as wood or stone. Kafisim just means pieces of or broken things. And therefore it can be broken bricks or it can be broken or pieces of wood. It doesn't mean a whole item. And so therefore sometimes it's defined as wood, sometimes it's defined as stone. The next Tosafot is what I was getting to, the important Tosafot here. He says, V'im tomar amai itzrich lemite midat gvil v'gazit. The Mishnah is about to enumerate all the sizes of these items. If we say, hakol k'minhag medina, so then what's the point of giving us sizes if the minhag medina is what governs? V'ish lomar. Dimnagu yoter mivav begvil lo yaseh v'chein kulam ela kashira mifurash. He says that these are maximum sizes that you can demand. Miumnagu lasot pachot mivav yaseh. Says you can go below these sizes, but you can't demand that the other party exceed these levels or these sizes. So what the Tosafot says is that these are maximum sizes of areas to be utilized to put up such walls. But if the Minhag HaMedina is to do less, then you can be governed by that, and you can do less. It's interesting, because what made him favor saying that it could be less and not more? You have other Rishonim, other way. These are the minimums, and the Minhag HaMedina can make it higher than that, or bigger than that. Then the Rabbeinu Tam says, V'nira l'deinu tam, t'davka behutza bedafna. That when it says a kol Minhag HaMedina, it means that you can do whatever you want in Minhag HaMedina, but there is a minimum standard. The minimum standard is hutza v'dafna, which are reeds, fence made out of sticks and reeds. Aval pachot mikan, Less than that, afilu nagu minhag hejiotu. Even if that's their minhag, it's a minhag hejiot. Mechiach mikan. And he proves him here, and this has serious implications in halacha. Diyesh minhagim she'en l'smoch alehem. Sometimes the minhag doesn't govern. Afilu heicha detnan. Even when it says in the Mishnah, kol minhag medina. So that minhag is not always a governing factor. There are limits to how far minhag can go. And he calls it here minhag hejiot. In other places we have what's called minhag shtut or minhag ta'ut, which means that if there is something that is done with no reason or mistakenly done, then you can invoke this principle to say that the minhag doesn't govern. We don't say that minhag governs in all situations. When we say minhag kedin, that means when the minhag has some value to it or some real backing to why it is the minhag. But below here, the Bar Meinu says, below a certain threshold, that's not called a separation anymore. Even if that's the minhag medina, it's just not acceptable anymore. And therefore, a kol minhag medina is overrun by the fact that there is a governing principle that it has to make sense. Just as an aside, but Moshe Feinstein, in a tshuva that he writes in Tchumin, in the original Tchumim, one of the first Tchumim, I think it's an Aleph or Bet, the Tchumim that were put out, Moshe Feinstein writes a tshuva about standing up or sitting down for Kiddush. And what you should do on Friday night, Shabbat morning, Yom Tov, I won't give it away, you can read it, we've spoken about it in another context, but over there he invokes this principle, where people are doing something, and he says it's a minhag ta'ot. He says there's no basis for the minhag, one of the minhagim, I'm not going to discuss which one now, but there is no basis for it, and therefore you can change it. Even if your parent did that, or acted that way with Kiddush, that doesn't mean you have to do it, because there's no basis for what they did in that circumstance. So you see him invoking this principle that minhag has that basis. You can't just say, because it's a minhag, therefore this is the way that we do it. The minhag has to be based on facts. It has to be based on a sensibility that incorporates something that has value or is backed by a reason that makes sense. Without that, it doesn't happen. And here the Rabbeinu Tam says that, basically, there, even though it says a kol minhag medina here, there is a minimum standard that still exists. And that minimum standard is that you can't go below chutzah v'dafna. Gvil. When it comes to gvil, when it comes to the irregular stones, zeh noten gimel tvachim, v'zeh noten gimel tvachim. Each party contributes 3 tvachim. In essence, the area incorporated by the gvil is 6 tvachim. And that's what the Baal Tosafot mentioned before. That was part of why they're mentioning it, to tell you not that each has to give 6, but each gives 3 for a total of 6 tvachim. And that's how you get the area that you need. Bigazit, for these stones that are chiseled and squared out, zenotein tfachayim v'mechsa, v'zenotein tfachayim v'mechsa, each one gives 2.5, for a total of 5 tfachim. Bikfisim, when it comes to these broken bricks, these half bricks, zenotein tfachayim, v'zenotein tfachayim, each one of them gives 2 tefach, for a total of 4 tfachim. So you can see, each material, we're dropping 1 tefach in the width of the wall. Bilivainim, if you do it with bricks, zenotein tefach umeksa, vizenotein tefach umeksa. Each one of them gives 1.5 tefach for a total of 3. This is where the Gemara asks. If whole bricks take up 3 tefachim, then if you take 2 half bricks, they should have to take up a 3 tefachim. Where do you get the 4 tefachim from? That's what I said before. You put a half brick and a half brick, and then you put filler material in between the 2 bricks. Almost like an insulation or something that they stick between them. It was small pebbles, dirt, and other things, and plaster that they poured in between the 2 sets of half bricks, and that's what gives you that extra tefach of thickness when it comes to 2 half bricks versus a whole brick. Okay, the fikach. So this is a difficult statement in the Mishnah. The fikach in Nafala Kotel, if the wall founds down, hamakom v'amanim shel shneihem, the location and the materials belong to both of them. So the Baal Tosafot already raised the issue and say, what else would you have thought? What other conclusion could you come to in this Mishnah? The Mishnah says that both parties are obligated to contribute half the land, half the materials. So now when it falls down, what's the question? That it belongs to both of them and that the land belongs to both of them. There's no other conclusion that you could come to. Oh, so very good. I quoted this Baal Tosafot at the end of Baba Metzia, and he brings up the question of the Beit Ve'Aliyah, which is, wait, if it falls into one of their 2 properties, then we might say that Amotzi Michavero Lavaraya, because it fell into the 2 properties. The Gemara in Baba Metzia says that's not true by Shutafin. Gemara there said that when you have Shutafin, they're not makpid on each other. So that's not the governing principle over here. So that can't be what they're worried about. So what is the Lefikach over here? So Tosfot over here says, I don't understand. If they're building this wall against their will, or they can be compelled to build the wall, then it shouldn't matter whose property it falls into or what happens here. Everybody knows that half the materials belong to each party and half the land belongs to each party. So then he brings the question that you said, V'lechse b'shut d'man kaimo. Let's look at whose property it is. That the other party, Hainu mishom dahota mitchila mivurar hadavar ubishut achad mehem nolada safek. So Tosfot over here says that this is different than the case of Beit Ve'aliyah for one reason. One reason is that in the case of Beit Ve'aliyah, originally it was clear who the property belonged to, and then the safek happened. I mean, we had a Beit Ve'aliyah, and we know that the upper part belonged to one, the lower part belonged to the other, and then it fell down. So now you're dealing with a safek about something that was previously clearly defined. Avahocha miikara no lada safek. He says here, from the outset there is a safek. V'mayu ba'im lachlok bocha kotel kayam. They came to split the wall. Even when the wall was still standing, hayu chokim b'shaveh misafek. They would split it misafek up front because we just don't know who the wall belongs to. V'afilu rabbonon disumchus. And even according to Rambam Sukhos, Delaylahu Maman Omotabu Safek Chokim Hachamodu. Over here, they would agree that you have to split it. Kevin Deleka Hacha Chazaka Lezeh Yeter Mizeh. Neither party has a greater Chazaka here because how can you prove that it's your wall more than the other wall? Again, even while it's standing, you have the same Safek as to who the wall belongs to, as to whom the property belongs to. And also over here, why doesn't it say Kol Da'olim Gavir, which is a terminology we'll see later on in the Masechta, a way to deal with situations where we have a safek. It's called the Olim Gavir, the stronger one wins. Whether that means physically the stronger one, or it means the one with the better raya, or the better situation. How come we don't invoke that over here? Avahocha, this is Balei HaTosafot L'shitatam. Over here, Ika Drarid Mamona. That's a terminology we saw in the beginning of Bava Metzia, at the end of Bava Metzia. Drarid Mamona is something where we had a question as to whether Sumchus's din applies by Drarid Mamona or not. And over here, you have Dror de Mamona. Dror de Mamona means the Safek pre-exists the problem that arises. And that's true here. Here, the Safek about who owns the Kotel pre-exists the question of splitting the Kotel. Even if they didn't come to court, we'd have this Safek. Even if they didn't make their claims, we'd still have this Safek. And for that reason, everybody would agree. Even the Chachamim would agree that you split it over here. So Tosfot is left in a bind, which he says, I don't know why the Mishnah is telling us this. This is such an obvious din that I don't need the Mishnah to tell me this. That's exactly what the Gemara is going to ask. We're going to see this on Daf Dalet, that the Gemara asks, Pshita. That's exactly what the Gemara says. Pshita. That this piece of the Mishnah is way too easy and unnecessary. And that's what the Gemara asks. And then, Dafilolo Pasuk Landina Demetnitin. That's what it means, Pshita. Even if the Gemara, Mishnah didn't tell us this, we would have known this. Then the Gemara answers, the Gemara there has an answer, and then Tosafot has to deal with that. So why is it that you have this din if it's all pshita? So the Gemara says, the nafal de reshuta de mechad min ayu, that it fell into one of their two properties. Tosafot says, wait a minute, why is that an answer? Right? Meaning that we just determined that it has no, makes no difference which they fall into. Here is the chiddush in Tosafot, which then I had said over when we read the Gemara in Bava Metzia about Shutafin. I said to you that when it falls into one of the two properties, the Shutafim are not makpid ahadodi, are not makpid on one another. Tosfot says, that is true in the short duration. In the long duration, people don't leave their things in other people's property, even if they are Shutafim. And therefore, if it's there for a long duration, that will start to give governance to the situation and tell us that one of the two parties has a chazaka over here. So Tosfot says that the answer of the Gemara, that if it falls into one of their two properties, it belongs to that party, is only about the materials. The property itself upon which the wall stood is always split between them. He says that for sure they split the property. Nobody's going to give up property. The only question is if one of them built the wall without the other's permission. So if a guy comes along and says, the other guy wasn't willing to build the wall, I built it by myself. So then we don't believe him. Even though he has amigo, we don't believe him. Why? Because he can force the other guy. Our Mishnah says you can compel the other party to build the wall. Nobody spends their own money when they can compel the other party to do it through the din, and they will insist that the other guy pays. So by definition, it's what's called migo b'makom edim, and he's not believed. And that's what Tosfot says, the Chiddush is over here, that even if he claims, I built it all myself, he's not believed. And the answer of the Gemara about falling over into one property and one of them has more rights than the other is only over a long duration. If it's there for a very long time, then already we can start to say that this person has a chazakah that it's his. Otherwise, the other person would have cleared it out. It's been there for 3 years. Come on, we're shutafim, but to leave it there for 3 years, that's unreasonable. That means it must belong to the other party. So that's how the Gemara solves the problem. But he also says that what's up for grabs here is the materials. The land is never up for grabs. That is always split between the parties. There are others that disagree with this position of the Balei HaTosafot. Now the Mishnah continues and says, V'chein b'gina. Similarly, in a garden. A garden here means a vegetable garden, something that's close to the house. Makom shnagu ligdor mechayvin oto. In a place where the minhag is to put it up, we are mechayevit. Later on in the Gemara, we will see Rava come and interpret this, and this is mostly the way that the Gemara addresses this part of the Mishnah, is that the stam, the default minhag, is to put up a wall by a gina. That's what the meaning of this statement in the Mishnah is that the stam minhag is to put up a wall with a gina, unless there's a minhag to the contrary. So that's the way it read. Aval bebika, in a bika, in a valley, this means in the open areas where there are large fields and tracts of land, in a place where they don't have the minhag to put up a wall, we don't force him. Again, Rava's reading of this, and again, the way the Gemara is going to read it, is that the default status in a bika is you do not have to put up a wall, unless there's a minhag to the contrary in this area. Ela imratza, in this situation where there's no obligation on the other party to contribute, kones letoch shelo, you move into your own property, ubone, and then you build it, voseh chazit mi bachutz. And then you have to make some sort of marking on the outside. The Gemara will discuss what that means and what that is and why you do it on the outside. But you make some indication that makes it clear that this is your property and that the wall was built solely on your property and it's your materials. By leaving this chazit on the other side, that's a way to indicate that it is your property. The fikach. Now, the fikach, im nafala kotel makom b'madim shelo. Over here, it's going to be his because he solely put it up and he made that decision. Im asumi dat shnehem. If they do it based on both of their agreement, bonim et hakotel be'emtza, then you build it in the middle, fosim chazit mikan umikan, then you put a chazit on both sides, because in doing so, you now make an indication that both parties contributed to this wall. So when I have a chazit on the outside, that means that the inner party is the one who built it. When I have a chazit on both sides, that means both sides contributed to the wall. Again, the Gemara will discuss what a chazit is and why it's on the outside, not the inside, and dealing with how people cheat with this and try to change the circumstances, and that's what this is about, trying to protect the one who contributed the land or the materials. Fikach, im nefala kotel ha-makom v'avanim shel shneihem. Again, the same idea over here. If they're both contributing, then of course, then the property and the items belong to both of them. Again, similar to what we saw before in the first part of the Mishnah, but here we're talking about similarly the Bik'ah, where there is or isn't a minhag to put up a wall. All right, now the Gemara begins with the word Savrua. The word Savrua throughout Shas means this was a Hava Mina that the Gemara will reject, and that will happen here. The only problem is that the Gemara in the beginning of tomorrow's daf will also say Savrua, and we do accept that the Halacha. So here the Rabbeinu Tam says that the second Savrua was just copying the first Savrua, and it's not really meant to say that that's the Havamina that gets rejected. From here, many Rishonim point out, Tosafot pointed it out in other places, in the Darim, in other areas, he points out or extrapolates this din to show you that it's not an absolute 100% true, that when the Gemara says Savar, or Savrua, or Savre, that means that it's going to be rejected in the end. Most times, 95% of the time you can say that, but there are exceptions to that, the rule. This is one of, because even though, again, the Gemara here is going to answer the question that we bring on this. We're going to have a proposition, a question, and an answer to that question, which means that the item could stand the halacha, because in the end, the Gemara answers the question. Nevertheless, the Gemara rejects this, because what the Balei Tosafot call, it is a dochak. The answer is just an answer to get through it, but it's not an answer that has enough power to stand the halacha. And that's why here, Savrua means, this is not going to be accepted the halacha. But again, tomorrow's daf will get to a Savrua that is accepted the halacha, but here we know this proposition is not going to be accepted. My mechitza. What is meant by the word mechitza in the Mishnah? Guda. It means a wall. When we say a shutafim sherasod asot mechitza, that means when they wanted to put up a wall. That's the idea, or a fence, a wall, some sort of separation between them. That's what the word mechitza means in our Mishnah. Kidetanya. Like we have a Braita. This Braita should be familiar to us because we saw it at the end of Baba Kama. Mechitzat Hakerem Shenifritza. You have a wall along a vineyard that breaks down. There is a wall that is separating between a vineyard and a field of grain. So we know that Kilei Hakerem is the growing of grapes together with grains. So if there is no separation between them, you're going to have a problem of Kilei Hakerem. So that's a serious issue because it's not only a Asur B'Achila, it's a Asur B'Hana'ah. It would wreck the crops. So now over here, you have the Mechitzat HaKerem Shenifritza. You have a wall that fell down. Now, had there been requisite space between the two crops, you wouldn't have a problem. But because there's a wall there, both sides push their crops right up against the wall. Because when you have a wall, there's no problem with Kilayim. Now when the wall collapses, I have an issue. I have an issue, which is now I have grapevines adjacent to grain, and that's going to cause a problem of Kilei HaKerem. Omer lo Gidor. We say to him, put the wall back up. Chazra v'nifritza, if it broke down again, Omer lo Gidor. We say to him again, put up the wall. The person to whom we are saying this is the Baal HaKerem, is the owner of the vineyard. So the reason being that we see him here as being the Mazik. That's what I mentioned before, that the Baalei Tosafot, even though later on the Masechta, we have a machloket as whether it's the Nizak that has to distance himself, or the Mazik that has to distance himself. Here it is, the Mazik is clearly the Baal HaKerem. And that is because there's a requirement for Baal HaKerem to leave Arba Amot of Avodat HaKerem. That's the amount of space you have to leave between a vineyard and a field of grain. So that obligation sits with the Baal HaKerem. For that reason, even the one who believes that normally it's the Nizak that has to move himself away, over here will agree, that's what the Baal Tosafot would say, that the Baal HaKerem has to do it because it's Girei Dilei. He is the one that is causing the problem over here. Now, we discussed this in Baba Kama, and here again, in short form, the Rabbeinu Tam discussed this. What is the reason it says, Omer lo Gidor, fence it up, and then it fell down and says, fence it up again. Why does it mention it twice over here? What happens on the third time? When it falls down on the third time, do you have to tell him again? So the Ri over here says, first of all, you have to give him Hatra'ah. We don't expect somebody to be aware of the fact that the wall fell down. He's not there all the time looking at his Kerem, seeing that the wall fell down. So you have to give him a warning. That's number one. Omer lo makes it sound like his neighbor says it. There are others that have a girsa that it says Omrim lo, which is Amri lo, which would be the Beit Din that would have to give the warning. And you have to warn him because it's not obvious that this problem is happening. And therefore, even if it falls multiple times, you have to warn him. The Ri says, I'm not certain about the third time, whether you have to warn him or not. Or is it already gone past the point where, whether it's a Muad or this wall is clearly unstable. And since it's unstable, then the person already has to take note of it and deal with the wall that's there. Rabbeinu Tam, on the other hand, says that the multiple warnings over here are a derivative of halacha that teaches us that each incident is considered to be a separate incident. And that is, in order for Kilei HaKerem to become a sur, it has to grow at least a minimum of 1/200th in order for it to become a sur. What the Rabbeinu Tam says is that we look at each incident where he's warning him as being a discrete event. And therefore, even if it grew 1/400th in the first time, and then another 1/400th the next time it fell, we're not mixtareif. We don't join them together to say that that makes it that it grew 1/200th in this situation. And for that reason, the Braita over here separates between the incidents to show that each one is a discrete event and they cannot be added together. Just note that the Ramban concludes just the opposite of the Rabbeinu Tam. The Ramban thinks that in each of these cases, they are mixtareif. That each warning starts the clock again, and it can be added to the previous case, and they can be mitzdareif together to add up to 1/200th. And the Gemara in the end of Baba Kama, they're bringing this Braita in order to determine Rabbi Meir's Shita. The problem is that the Braita never mentions Rabbi Meir's name at all. So over there in the Gemara, the Baalei Tosafot over there, and more shorthand over here, the Baalei Tosafot discuss the fact that this Braita correlates with a Stam Mishnah in Kilayim. And we know that Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. And so Stam Mishnah in Kilayim, which seemingly has a similar idea or opinion to what is proffered or offered in this Braita, therefore they extrapolate from that that Rabbi Meir is the author of this Braita, and through that determine that this is Rabbi Meir's opinion. All right, so now the Braita continues and says, Nitya Eshimena, if he gives up and doesn't put up the wall, Velo Gajran doesn't put up, Harzeh Kidesh, then you have the Kidesh. Kidesh is the terminology that is borrowing from the Pasuk, as Rashi notes over here, because it says, Pen Tukdash, Then tugdash is the word that is used to suggest what happens to kilei akerim. When you plant kilei akerim, it becomes quote-unquote kodesh. Kodesh means asur ba'achila, asur ba'ana. So it's just a borrowed term from the Torah's terminology. V'chayav ba'achriyuta. And now he's responsible for the damage that is done. So the damage that is done is now he made his friend's grains asurim, and now he's going to have to pay for that damage. So number one, Tosfot says over here, dafka nityaish. This is only true when he gives up hope. Avalo nityaish. If he didn't give up hope and he intends to fix it, as long as he's engaged in fixing it, even if it grows 1/200th, it's not a sur because being engaged is enough. Tosfot says, okay, that's interesting, but where do you get that from? How do you know that? So Tosfot tries to bring it from the pasuk, because the pasuk says, lo tizra karmecha kilayim, that you should not plant your field kilayim. So planting is an active engagement in doing something. And that's what he says, dumia dizria denechale. Just like planting is something that you're actively engaged in that you want, that is when kilayim applies. But when it's something that you're not wanting, meaning that you want to put the wall up, and you don't want it to grow as kilei akerim, you can prevent it from happening as kilei akerim, unless you've stopped, and you just said, I give up, or I'm not going to do it, I'm not putting up the wall. Only then is there a problem. Tosfot over here raises a separate issue, which is something, again, we saw in Baba Kama, which is Hezek Sheino Nikar. Isn't this damage that is not visible? The Gemara Baba Kama, and what we paskin is, that Hezek Sheino Nikar is not chayav. If you can't see the Nezek, then you're not chayav for the Nezek. The Chachamim instituted a knas on people who do this type of Hezek, when they metame other people's truma, and when they put porn yayin nesech into other people's wine, and they ruin other things where it's hezek sheinu nikar, they were kones. They put in a knas to prevent them from doing such items. So Tosfot is perplexed over here. Isn't this your classic case of hezek sheinu nikar? You can't see the damage that is done. So Tosfot comes up with two possible answers over here. One answer is, niradari, tahai choshev hezek, nikar, shari nikar shehu kilayim, kishorei akafani basadeh. This is visible hezek, because you can see that the kerem and the grains are adjacent to each other. It's obvious that you have a problem of kilayim. It's not hezek sheinu nikar, even though in each item individually you can't see it, but the way they're growing, it's so clear that there's nezek. He says, even though if you have a sheretz on top of somebody else's truma, that looks obvious too. That's obvious that he's trying to be metameh them. He says, no, you don't know, because it'd have to be mukshar the kabel tuma. If the grains were not yet mukshar the kabel tuma, they wouldn't be mekabel tuma, even if there's a sheretz on top of it. So it's not obvious. Or whether you might not even know that it's truma. So there he says, that's real hezek sheinu nikar. Over here, through your own looking, you could determine that you have some sort of kilei akerim over here. And he says that you can't say over here that this hezek sheinu nikar, and it's a knas. That's what's happening over here, because if that was the case, the person would only be liable if he did it b'mezid, if he did it intentionally, and not if he did it b'shogeg, because knas generally only applies to people who do things intentionally, not unintentional doing. But our brayta makes no distinction like that, so he's unwilling to accept that it's hezek sheinu nikar and as a knas, but rather it's true nezek. The true nezek is that it's visible to both parties over here. The reason that we compel the counterparty to warn him and not Beit Din doesn't get involved is because the Bala Karim is a loser here too. When it becomes Kilei Akerim, not only is the grain ruined, but so are the grapes. So he has a vested interest in doing something about this. So we don't need to get Beit Din involved, because by definition he should want to rectify the problem because it's going to ruin his Karim. So that's why we allow the two parties to deal with it. We allow one party to warn the other party and don't get Beit Din involved in the process. Now, what do you see over here? You see that the word mechitzat akerim was a wall. So the brayta said mechitza, and when it was talking about the mechitza, it meant together, it meant a full-fledged wall. So the definition of the word mechitza now is geder. So now once we've done that, we go to our Mishnah, and we fill in the word geder, which means ashutafim shirasu lasot geder or shiratsu lasot kotel. That's the way that you're going to read the Mishnah. So now the Gemara says, Taimo diratsu. That means that the putting up of this wall is voluntary. Because our Mishnah says, if they want to put up a wall, halarotsu, if they don't want to put up the wall, in mechayvinuto, we won't obligate them. Our Mishnah says this is a voluntary action. So now, since they wanted to put it up, they put up a wall. Alma, hezek riyah, lav shmei hezek. From this you would conclude that a person's ability to see into the other yard is not deemed to be hezek, because we will not compel you to put up a wall that blocks the visibility between the two parties. And as Rashi says over here, daya l'chalka b'misipas shel yateto teitzim tkuyim baretz. You could just stick up stakes along the way to indicate where the property line is, split it, but no hezek riyah. You don't need a solid wall or solid fence between them. And that's what's being told to us by the Mishnah. Ratzu, if they want to put up a wall, then they have to agree to do it. They don't agree to do it, we just create a borderline between them and we could split the property. So ve'ema, let us suggest an alternative. That mechitza plugta. The mechitza does not mean a wall, but rather to split, to divide. Kidichiv, vatihi mechtzat ha'eda. That a half of the eida, or the part of the eida that was split in this side, or having the eida. So you see the word mechza or mechitza is used to mean to split, not just to be a wall or a division. Now, as the Balei Tosafot point out over here, nobody really believes that the word mechitza means guda, does not mean a wall. Overwhelming evidence throughout Shas, throughout the Torah, is that a mechitza means a wall. So then why over here all of a sudden we would change it? It's because the difficulty of explaining it the other way. The difficulty of explaining it as a mechitza is going to lead us to do something and say that maybe the interpretation of the word should be a less common interpretation because of that difficulty. So now, the Gemara says, Alma, if that's the case, then, kevin deratzu bonim et hakotel bal kocho, that here, once they decide they're going to split it, then we can compel him to build the wall against his will. Because what's the Mishnah saying now? The Mishnah is saying, Ashutafim shiratzu lasot mechitza. Shutafim that want to split the chatzer. Then, bonim et hakotel. They must build a wall. Before, the ratzu was to build the wall, period. Now, the ratzu is to split it, to agree to split it, then the building of the wall is compelled, that we will force you to build the wall once you decide to split it. Rashi comes in here, and notes for us the Mishnayot that are later in the Masechta, that certain chatzerot, you can compel the parties to split when they're a large enough size. When they're large enough size, there's enough room for arba amot for each party. We'll see later on in the Gemara that arba amot means arba amot besides the doorways. You get four amot around the doorways, and then another four amot. If you have that, then you can force a splitting of the chatzer. If you don't have that, then you can't force a split. In a chatzer that is large enough to be split, one party can compel the other party to do it. If they both agree to leave it open, it can stay open. In a chatzer that's too small, neither party can compel each other. They have to agree to split it. So the ratzu in our Mishnah, as Rashi says over here, shlo yabach chet amot. There's not enough to split four amot for each party, and therefore you can't compel the other party to split the chatzer. Then ratzu becomes the factor, if they want to split it. And that's what it means here. Ratzu, then they can decide to split it. Once they've decided to split it, we compel them to build the wall. If that's the case, Alma, Hezek Riyah, Shmei Hezek. Then what you're learning from that is that once you decide to split it, you've got to put up a full-fledged wall because seeing would be a problem after that point in time. That's why we compel you to put up a solid wall when you decide to split it. Ihochi, hai shiratzu lasot mechitza, shiratzu lechatzot mibayile. The wording in the Mishnah is very awkward now. Because if you look at it, it says, shutafim shiratzu lasot mechitza, to make a mechitza. That word mechitza then obviously is saying a wall, not a split. What does it mean that they wanted to make a split? That's only people who learn Hebrew first and then translating it to English might say something like that. They want to make a split. But in a proper grammatical way, you're not going to say to make a split. You're going to say that shiratzu lachatzot. They wanted to split it, wanted to separate between themselves. So the language of the Mishnah is not compelling in that direction. It's actually difficult to say that. Hi, shiratzu lasot mechitza, shiratzu lachatzot mi bailashu, that they wanted to split it. Elamai. So now let's go back to our original assumption, guda, that it's a wall. Now you have a problem because then the language of the Mishnah is also difficult because it says, hashutafim shiratzu lasot mechitza b'chatzer. They wanted to put up a wall in the chatzer. Bonim et hakotel. You build the wall. Why don't you just use a pronoun at that point? If you want to build a wall, then you, bonim oto, you build it in the middle. Right, so you don't need to repeat the word kotel if the first word meant kotel. And that's the Gemara's next question. That if you say guda, bonim et hakotel, bonim oto mi bayile. You should have used the pronoun instead of the actual noun of the kotel. It doesn't make sense. It says, itano oto, had it written oto, havamina bimisipas ba'alma. I would have suggested that misipas ba'alma would have been sufficient. Meaning that when it says over here, When Shiratzu Lasod Michitza Bechatzer, they want to put up a wall, Bonimoto, you build it. What's the it? Whatever it is that separates. Anything that you separate. There is no definition to the Kotel. What does Bonimeta Kotel come and teach you? That when you have to build it, you gotta build a wall. And that's in Kamash Vilan, Kotel. Kotel means a real wall, and not Misipas Be'alma. Rashi says over here, what is the Havamina? Rashi says the Havamina Misipas Be'alma. Mayr Meditin Diu Nami Mechitza Ikru. That it's talking about it's a Mechitza. Viratsu Diktani Achaluka Koi. Rashi over here suggests that when we have the Havamina, that be Misipas Be'alma, that Havamina means that we're going to read the Mishnah is that they ratsu lachlok. So that was, if they want to split it, then we put up a misipas. Then we put up a kotel that is a misipas. If you had written oto. Tosfot is bothered by that because this part of the Gemara is assuming that the word mechitza means guda, means an actual wall. So why are you saying that ratsu lachlok is the interpretation of the Mishnah? Therefore, the Tosfot brings an alternate view, which is supported also by the view of the Oroch and the way he interprets it over here, which is he says, Perish v'ratzu diktani misipas, that they wanted to put up a misipas. Afagav d'v'lav v'ratzu nami osim misipas, even though as Rashi already noted above, and that's why probably compelled Rashi to say otherwise over here, is that when you don't want to split it with a kotel, then what is the base thing that you put between them? That's a misipas. So if the misipas is what you would do anyway, then what does it mean ratsu? What do they agree to do that is beyond a misipas if they already are putting up a misipas even if they don't agree? So Tosfot says over here, Hainu misipas garua, that there are different qualities of misipas. Aval ki ratsu osim misipas migvil v'gazit k'minyag medina. But when you want to put up a separation between them, then you put up a separation that is more significant, made in a gvil and gazit. Well, once you do that, then you have a real separation between them. Then what is the idea of having a havamino of a misipas like this? So Tosfot says is that's because this wall has malei chalonot. It is full of windows. So misipas doesn't only mean a stakes in the ground showing a borderline. It can be any wall that divides but that does not provide privacy. And therefore in the Mishnah, when we would have read it, had you read the word oto there, it would be, if you want to split it with a wall, we would have thought you put up a misipas. Misipas, not like Rashi says, misipas means stakes in the ground, but misipas means a wall, like the list in the Mishnah, all those different items, but walls that have tons of windows in them. So you're going to put up real materials, but we're not talking about a wall that divides and gives privacy. Once you say the word kotel again, the word kotel not only means to put up a dividing wall, but also put up a wall that gives privacy. So that's how Tosafot reads the Havamina here of the Gemara of the Misipas Ba'alma. As Rashi reads Misipas Ba'alma, meaning literally the stakes that he mentioned before. But then he's into a problem because that's the default, even if you don't agree how you divide up the property. Because here we said you can divide the property. It's just a question of what you put up to divide the property. The default is a Misipas. So Rashi has to say something else and says, if they agree to split it, where it's a property that might otherwise not be split, then they have to put up a misipas. They would have put up a misipas. Again, it's a harder way to read the Mishnah, and that's why Tosafot offers an alternative over here. Inami, he gives an other way to explain it, which is, lefi she'eno gvoa yud, that it's not 10 tefachim high. And Tosafot plays around with, what is one of the misipases is 4 eramot high versus the one that is 10 tefachim high, or maybe one of them is 10 tefachim high and the other one is less than 10 tefachim high. But anyway, Tosfot is coming up with this idea that there are different qualities. Even when you deal with misipas, there are different qualities of misipas, and that can create the difference between what is the default, and when they agree to build it, what would be the upgraded misipas. Okay, Gemara says, Bonim et hakotel ba'emtza. You build the wall in the middle. Gemara says, Pshita. Lo, tzrika de kodim chad, veratzio de chavere. One of them went ahead and appeased or placated his friend. He was the one who was making the demand for the wall to be built. So when he's making the demand for the wall to be built, he wants it to be built in the middle. Maudatema, what I have thought, matzi amrle, the counterpart, the other party can say, kitratze lecha b'avira. I agreed to you to split the airspace. But teshmishta loitratze lecha. But as far as giving up my property for the wall, I never agreed to that. I agreed to split the property in half. What I didn't agree to is have to give up my property, the utility of my property, in order to build a wall. Kamash Malan, that's what it comes to teach you, that Bonim Be'emtza is that you must build it in the middle. So now we did come to a conclusion, which is that we can use the word kotel in our Mishnah. And that's what we said sabrua before. It's kotel. You can make it a wall. And we proved that it fits into the Mishnah and fits well into the Mishnah. Despite that fact, we say it's not halacha because the Gemara started with sabrua. So what the Balei Tosafot say over here is that these answers are bedochak. These answers are very difficult answers because it's not so simple to just say that the oto is this and not a misipas. Gemara is just trying to get through it to say that it's a possible havamina, but in the end, it's not a compelling havamina. And that's because, Hezek, Rialav Shmei Hezek, is it really true that if you believe that the word mechitza in the Mishnah means a wall, then you believe that Hezek Riyah is something that is not compelling? Because you can decide whether you want a wall. You don't have to build a wall. That means that we don't worry about Hezek Riyah. But so over here is if they want to build the wall. If they don't want to build the wall, they can just split the property and not put up a wall. Keeping the original interpretation that Mechitza means not a split, but a wall. So Tashma, if you're going to accept the fact that the word Mechitza in the Mishnah means a wall, then you have concluded that Hezek Riyah lo shmei Hezek, because if you want to build the wall, you build it. Otherwise, you can divide it up in any way that you want. V'chein begina. The Mishnah says, so too in a garden. So now it makes it sound like in the garden, there's a problem of Hezek Miya, and therefore you can compel the party to put up a wall. Well, v'chein begina makes it sound like the chatzer and the gina have the same rules. And if they have the same rules, then if the gina, you can compel them to put up a wall, then you should be able to compel them in the chatzer to put up a wall, and then Hezek Riyah is a real issue. It says, gina shiny. Gina is different. There might be a bigger reason to put up a wall by a gina than by a chatzer. Kid the Rabbi Abba. Because the Rabbi Abba's din. Dama Rabbi Abba, ma Rav Huna, ma Rav. Sur la adam lamod b'sadeh chaviro b'shah shihio medit b'kamutah. You're not allowed to stand over a person's field when it's fully ripened, when it is rich maturation, it's ready to be harvested. Because, as Rashi says over here, shelo yizikenu b'ayin hara. So you don't damage him with the ayin hara. So this is where the issue of ayin hara is brought up by Rishonim to equate with Hezek Riyah. Not just with the issue of tzniut or Hezek, but ayin hara, that's a part and parcel of this problem. The Balei Tosafot over here already ask, wait a minute, if this is a problem for a garden, then it certainly should be a problem for a bik'ah, for the valley. So why in the valley do we not compel you to put up a wall? So Tosafot says there's a big difference between a garden and a valley. In the valley, you plant large tracts with grain, and these are fields that mature once a year. There's 1 month in the year where they're fully in maturation, and then you're going to harvest them. So people can hold themselves together and not look there during that period of time, not giving ayin hara. Vegetable gardens are continuously or constantly producing. For things with different time periods during the year where they mature, you always have things that are growing and maturing in the garden. For that reason, it's a around the clock or around the year problem, and therefore person can't guard himself from never looking there. And that's why we would compel you to put up a wall by a gina, not by a bika. Vaha, doesn't the Mishnah say v'chein? Tani? Okay, so you explain to me why gina might need a wall more than a chatzer. But when the Mishnah connects them with the conjunctive vav and says v'chein, makes it sound like the din should be the same. It says, agvil v'agazit. Now that's referring to the materials that you use and how much space is given up. So the v'chein is not telling you, just like by the gina, where you is Hezek Riyah, so too by the chatzer there is Hezek Riyah. Just saying to you, no, just like by the chatzer, where these are the governing rules of what wall you put up, that's also the governing rules by the gina. If you agree to gazit or gavil, these are the numbers that you use for building those walls. So again, this is a dochak way to explain the Mishnah, and that's why, in the end, we will reject this assumption. Tashma. This is upcoming Mishnah. Kotel chatzer shenafal. You have a wall of a chatzer that fell down. Mechayvin oto livnot ad dalet amot. You compel him to build until 4 amot. Above 4 amot, even if the wall was higher before, you can't compel him to build higher than that. So there it's clear, why do you have to put up 4 amot? 4 amot is a rule with regards to Hezek Riyah. If you have 4 amot, it prevents people from being able to see. So a 4 amot wall, the fact that the Mishnah demands when it falls down that you put up a wall that's 4 amot high, it's clearly addressing the issue of Hezek Riyah. So you see the Mishnah later on does worry about Hezek Riyah. It says, Nafal Shiny. When a wall falls down, it's different because they've already been using the chatzer in a manner that assumes that the other party can't see it. There was a wall there before. So everybody would agree that if there was a wall there before and it fell down, that there is Hezek Riyah now because you've changed the status quo. And in changing the status quo, we want to return it to the status quo. And that's why we compel him to do that. The Gemara says, Udikarila Makarila. Then what was the questioner thinking? Meaning that, what was he thinking up front that he asked such a question? It's clear that Nafal is shiny, that falling down is different. So he says, no. Seifa Itztrichale. He needs the latter half of that Mishnah. He thought, Midal Dolamala in Michaivinoto. From 4 amot or higher, you don't compel him. So what he was saying is that the Mishnah wasn't coming to tell you, or was unnecessary to tell you the first piece of information, which is the Dalet Amot, that you have to replace it, because that's Nafal shiny. But he's saying the fact that you don't have to build above 4 amot. The fact that you don't have to build above 4 amot clearly is indicative of the fact that the 4 amot are being done because of Hezek Re'iyah. Because of Hezek Re'iyah. Why else would you compel him to build 4 amot and not above 4 amot? Why is 4 amot a significant measurement? Ela Imkain, you're talking about Hezek Re'iyah, because that's where it's relevant. Hezek Re'iyah is only relevant by up to 4 amot, which we'll see later on in the Gemara about where the 4 amot comes from or what the 4 amot is in terms of determining. All right, so now the Gemara says, Tashma, Kofin oto livnot beit sha'ar. We force him to build an entrance way to the chatzer. Videlet the chatzer, and a doorway for the chatzer. Shma mina hezek Re'iyah, shme hezek. When it comes to hezek Re'iyah, that is hezek, because why would you compel someone to put a doorway or a beit sha'ar there? The only reason we do that is to stop people from looking in. Now, that's not true. You might put up a door or a gateway there in order to prevent people from coming in, not because they're looking in. But the answer is that that would be fine for a delet. If you just want to stop people coming in, you'd put up a doorway and then you'd lock the door and then people can't come in. Why would you put up a beit sha'ar, which is like a vestibule that coming into the chatzer? The only reason you would build something that of that size is in order to be sure that nobody can look in to the chatzer. And that's what the Gemara says, Hezeket derabim, shiny. So the Gemara says that when it comes to the rabim, it's different. Meaning that there is a certain amount of hezek Re'iyah which is tenable. There's a certain amount of hezek Re'iyah which is not tenable. When you have openings to the public domain, that's a type of Re'iyah which is just too much. Everybody can lean in. Every Joe Schmo can look in there. When we're dealing with the chatzer, which involves one party, two parties, three parties, maybe there, that's not called hezek Re'iyah. It says, Udiyachid lo. Is it really true that individuals don't have a din of hezek Re'iyah? Tashma. What about, again, a Mishnah coming up? In chokim et chatzer, achyu badal ramot lezeh, vidalot ramot lezeh. You do not divide up a chatzer unless there's sufficient property for each individual to have 4 amot. Ha yeshba, kedeh lezeh, kedeh lezeh, chokim. And over there it says, if you do have sufficient ground to split it up, then you could compel the other party to split the chatzer with you. My lav, how do you split it? Lai lav bekotel, that you do it with the wall. Gemara says no. Lav bemisipas be'alma, no, that you do it with a misipas, with that dividing line between them. You can't prove anything from there because it doesn't tell you the materials by which you split it. It just simply says you split it. How you split it could be a misipas, like we said before. Tashma. Hacholu note, when it comes to windows, ben milamala, ben milamata, ben miknegdam, dalaramot. When it comes to your neighbor's windows, you have to distance yourself away from the window when you build your house, you build a wall, you have to distance 4 amot in order not to impinge on his light, rights. Which is that the light that coming into the house through that window, if you build too close to that, then you will stop the light coming in. So you have to give him at least 4 amot of distance between your wall that you build and his windows. In addition to that, the wall must be, your windows, or the wall must be 4 amot higher or 4 amot lower than his window. And that's in order to prevent you from being able to look into his window. Because if something is within 4 amot of his window, then when you're on top of that, or you're looking through your window, you'll be able to see into his window and into his house. Bitani Allah. Minim Alan. Why above? Kedei shlo yetzitz v'yireh. Why do you give you 4 amot on top so that you won't look in and see what's going on inside of his house? Milamaton, why do you have to lower it or bring things lower than 4 amot? Kadesh lo yamid, yamod, v'yireh, because you won't stand on top of whatever it is, the wall or whatever it is there, and look into the window. Mikenegdan, why do you have to leave space opposite them? Kadesh lo yafil, so it won't cause impingement on his light rights to the house. So over there, you see that's clear. The Mishnah is telling you that there's a problem with Hezek Re'iyah. And this is what we mentioned in the introduction. Hezek de bayit shiny. When it comes to privacy in the house, that's very different. Over there, everybody agrees that you need to have privacy in the house. That's an area that people don't have a right to look in, and where Hezekiah is clearly a problem according to everyone. Hezekiah and the Chatzir is what we're discussing over here. And the Bayit, everybody agrees, that's really the private domain, and a private domain to the point where there's Hezekiah, if you can see in. Tashma, Damar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel, Gag HaSamuch LeChatzir Chabero. Person has a roof next to his friend's Chatzir. Osim Leo Ma'akeh Gvoa Dalet Amot. You have to make a wall around the roof that is 4 amot high. Now, in terms of a Ma'akeh, you have to put up a Ma'akeh so nobody falls off your roof. But who says you have to put it up 4 amot high? 4 amot high is not just a fence or is something that blocks people falling off of it. It's something that blocks visibility down into the chatzer. So you see again that we compel the person on the roof to put up something that blocks this visibility into the chatzer. We want to protect the privacy of the individual's chatzer over which this roof overlooks. It says again, shiny hotam, that's different. Damarlei, bala chatzer, the bala gag. Because the only of the chatzer can say to the balagag, lididi kviyali tashmishi. He says, listen, in the chatzer, I use my chatzer all the time. Lididach, lo kviyalach tashmitach. You, on your roof, you sometimes use it, you sometimes don't use it. It's not a main area of activity. The chatzer is a very big area of activity, and I'm in there all the time. You on your roof, you're not there all the time. Voyadana b'hayidna idna slika. And I have no idea when you're going to be there, v'otit and come. Did stanam enough that I know to keep my privacy at those times. So he says, the problem here is that he can be surprised. If he knew that he was always on his roof, and he used his roof all the time, then it wouldn't be a question, because then he'll know not to use his chatzer. The problem is that 90% of the time he's not on his roof. So the person uses the chatzer, assuming as if it is a private area. But then in those 10% of the times, the guy could surprise him. And he doesn't want to be surprised, because he is using his chatzer for these private matters. And therefore, we demand that he put up a wall that blocks his visibility into the chatzer in order to allow the full functionality or utility of the chatzer, because he won't come out and surprise the person that's working in the chatzer. So for that reason, again, since these are unusual circumstances where the hezekiah is much more apparent, either because you're in a garden where there's a specific problem of ayin hara, or you're in a house which demands privacy, or you're up against the rabim, whatever that rabim means, whether it means a chatzer facing outside the shut rabim, or chatzer facing an area where the rabim can gather, where there is more extreme form of a hezekiah. Those areas will have hezekiah, even according to the one who says that the hezekiah lo shmei hezek, because these are unusual or particular cases where there is a concentrated problem, or the hezekiah is really overstepping a bounds of really creating nezek or ruining person's privacy or utility. But in a normal circumstance of a chatzer, maybe there would be no demand for hezekiah. Right, so with that, we end here on the top of Gimel Med Aleph, and tomorrow we'll begin the Lishna Achrina, which is the alternate way to explain our Mishnah, which will explain our Mishnah as being hezekiah shmei hezek, and the Mishnah being about the mechitza not being a guda, a wall, but rather mechitza being splitting, dividing the property.